Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, as always, he's in that other box, and he's bringing the awesome. He's Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
Awesome sauce. That would have totally rhymed if you said that.
Yeah, I know, but, you know,
sort of-ish. It's a bit of a stretch, but we'll make it work.
The awesome sauce.
Yes.
The Thai, spicy Thai noodles. Is that what it was?
Yeah, oh my God. Don't remind me. Stephen.
Yes, that's me.
We are doing a PAX Online kickoff.
We are. This is it.
This is real.
Boy, did this come out of nowhere.
We're going back to PAX. We're there.
Ladies and gentlemen, round of applause for Dual Screens. We're back. We got it. We're in. We're in like Flynn. We're ready to start. And with us to kick everything off is Mary Sell and Michael Sorrenti, creators of Smash Ball, the developers of Smash Ball, a high-speed sports action game. Mary, Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Very excited to have you here. We're very excited to start PAX. This is going to be our third together. Isn't that right, Andy?
I know.
Our third PAX event. This is quite strange to do it this way. I'm not going to lie. Not that we were too used to the other way, but
We had a good flow going last time.
We did. And the flow is, we're in mid-flow right now, Andy. But this is the kickoff. Folks, for those of you that are new to this podcast, this is the Dual Screens Podcast. This is an interview show where we bring on industry devs and industry guests to talk about their story. They could be an artist, a programmer, a husband and wife, developer duo. Doesn't matter. They all have a story to tell, and we want to be their platform to do it. The show posts each and every Thursday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including our home, podbean.com. And you can watch the video version of the podcast on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/dualscreenstv. That's D-U-E-L, like fighting, because that's all Andy and I do is fight each other to the death.
But there's so much love.
There is. There's a lot of love. There's a lot of love here. So, Mary, Michael, double M, M&M. Smash Ball, why don't you tell our listeners, just to start us off with a little elevator pitch, what is Smash Ball?
I'm going to put Mary on the spot and let her explain it.
Sure.
I think he said it so well. He said it's...
it's basically an action sports combat game. So the easiest way to sort of describe it, because it's its own unique sport, is it's sort of like tennis on speed, where the goal is to score on your opponent's net after you break it down, or to just use the ball, weaponize it, and destroy your opponent completely. So there's two ways of winning. And it sort of appeals to people who like competitive games, but also those who like fighting games. You just have to decide sort of what you want to go for. You can win by scoring, or you can win by basically destroying the other guy's two bots.
Awesome. And a quick question right off the bat. Did this start as that? Did it start as one of those components and then you kind of added on to it as you were developing? Was it like a simple tennis sports type game first, or was it a mech, you know, or kind of arena battle, or like how did you marry these two or three concepts together?
Yeah, it started off as rallying the ball back and forth, sort of like tennis, where you're trying to score on the opponent. And then we found that it was interesting to sort of weaponize the ball and be able to hit the other guy like you do in dodgeball. So it added a little bit more skill to the game. And then we added some other features. So before you'd be able to score in the net like off one shot, but now you have to slowly break down the net until it's open, and then you get an opening to score. So it was some things that we did while testing with the public. People kept asking for it to be more competitive. So we had a few more things to add skill.
Right. And you have to really pay attention, because I was playing earlier today and I noticed I could score like 8 goals on myself if I'm not mindful of where the ball is, because there's no break. Like, okay, you scored a point. All right. Take a breather, reset. Nope. It's
coming
the
back.
Ball just keeps on moving. It's like, oh, it's still behind me. I'm down by 12.
Super fast. The build you got is kind of, it's the old build, but it's the more stable build. But yeah, it's very fast, and it's very easy to die quickly.
Yeah.
I think to Steven's question, it really started as a simple,
we thought it would be totally simple.
That was, a mock hybrid of tennis and ping pong with some really cool futuristic mechs. And we thought it was going to be a really simple, short production schedule, make it, get in, get out. And then we sort of let the team go crazy. And every time we had a brainstorm, it was, wouldn't it be cool if there were explosions? Wouldn't it be cool if it was this? And the thing just started to take on a life of its own. And then we thought tournament mode and, you know, competitive. So it really started with a really simple idea at first, and it just sort of snowballed from there.
There's always that point when we speak to a lot of developers, especially smaller teams, there's always that point where they go, okay, enough. We can't keep adding to this. Are you at that point yet? Or are you still like, pile it on, boys?
No, we're at that point now where we're refining and polishing. Gotcha. So for Pat, we're working on a demo, which is a single player demo, just so that people can play it and get the gist of the game. And then the multiplayer and all of that is working, thank God. But it's much better when you play as a multiplayer, but the servers aren't quite ready for that load yet. Mm. So we're feature complete. We have about 100 part options right now, because you could actually customize your mechs. So there's hundreds. I think when you combine them all, there's thousands of part combinations. But we're feature complete. So we've created all the manufacturer part sets, which is sort of like, we compare it to cars, right? So you have your fast parts, like your Ferrari, you have your durable parts, like your, I don't know, Dodge truck type parts and things like that. So all of that is done. Right now it's just polishing and watching people play and refining things. So for the next little while, that's what it's going to be about. And then we're going into our closed alpha and beta, where we'll just test the server to see, you know, how well it scales.
I want to mention on those 1,000 parts you can customize your mechs with. I was really happy to see that you can actually see the visual changes on your mech with each part you customize it with. I've been playing Marvel Avengers the last couple of days, and each piece of loot you pick up doesn't reflect on the character. It's like, well, sure, here's a new vest, but I can't see it. Here comes this little game, Smash Ball. It's like, oh, wow, see, it is possible to actually make custom unique assets and put them on your character.
It takes forever, I'll be honest, and it's probably
so worth it.
Shouldn't have done, but because it took so long, but it, definitely we want people, because all the parts have stats, we wanted to have something a little bit special, and because you're competing to earn these parts, we thought that they should look a little bit more unique, which they do. So yeah,
I didn't dabble in the marketplace, but I did see that little area. I didn't go in it at all, but like, can you go into what this marketplace is? Is this to like purchase, like, is this an exterior marketplace, like a peer-to-peer, or is this within the game's marketplace?
It's within the game. So basically, as you compete and win tournaments, different tournaments are going to be categorized differently, so you'll get better parts or rewards, right? It could be tokens as well. But the idea is you want to earn all the parts, and then you can equip the parts. And if you have a full set, then you'll have like the full. Our teams have names right now, like Fat Blue Jay, but just to make it easy for you to understand, it's like all the Ferrari parts, right? So if you have all the Ferrari parts, your mech's going to be fast. But you need to collect them all to be the fastest.
That makes sense.
It's like a Mega Man X, Steven. You get all the armor pieces, and then you're unstoppable.
Indeed.
Exactly.
Indeed. I was unstoppable in the two or three matches I had. I was outscoring my opponent like by 40. I was just.
Were you a controller or a keyboard?
Controller.
Controller all the way. You need it for this, I feel.
My little Xbox controller here, and oh man, I was making it. They didn't know what hit, whether to shit or go blind. I was just coming at them so fast. I was like, yaga!
Did you play against advanced AI?
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
No comment.
Let's just leave it at me crushing.
I was told that I don't suck by the game. That's pretty good.
That's good. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. The narrator said I was not sucking.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's that.
So you met all the requirements.
Yeah. The minimum requirement. Excellent. Yeah. That's what we strive for around here. Just Let us meet requirements, and then we'll go.
It has a pulse. Give it a trophy.
Give it a trophy, exactly. So let's talk a little bit about the combat aspect of this, because you do have the ability to destroy your opponent as opposed to just scoring on your opponent. Now, I noticed that there were like parts behind the mech that you can hit with the ball, and you hit it enough times. I don't know if it was 3 or 6. I couldn't tell. Like, I didn't know that that's what I was doing until after they blew up. I was like, oh, wait, something over there changed. Okay, I could destroy this dude with that. But then you also have abilities that are, I think you call them like a card or something like that, that you attach to your mech, and you obviously unlock a ton more. So go into the different variations. How did this kind of snowball? What kind of stuff can we see? Can the players expect when they get into this game?
So yeah, we wanted to add a little more depth. So you can weaponize the ball. You can charge the ball when you hit it over to your opponent. And if they don't charge it back when they hit it, it's almost like a game of chicken, right? So based on your charge, if I don't return it well, I'll take a little bit of damage. But in addition to that, we wanted to add a little bit more juice. So you can equip boom balls, which you have to charge in your match. And then once they're charged, you're able to weaponize the ball. So there's things like a tornado ball, invisible ball. So basically special one-time missile ball. And you'll equip it, and then you sort of, you decide. You can go after the net, or you can go after the actual mech and try to destroy it. So it's sort of like certain people like to go after just winning by scoring. And then certain people, especially when you're a little bit down, you know, if you're down 20 points, you're just going to put all your eggs into the basket of trying to kill the guy, right? So that's what the boom balls are meant for, and they're quite fun. And right now we're just working on some animations to make them pop a little bit more, so that you see what, like, your tornado ball will spin you up in there, and then you'll drop down and explode into pieces. So way to add a little bit more finesse and skill to the game, because when you use the boom ball matters, and what boom ball you equip matters.
That's definitely more my speed. Like, if I'm not doing too well at a game, if I can just kick your ass with brute strength, that's all I need to be the victor. It reminds me when I was a kid, I would play Street Fighter with these little like 8-year-old kids who would totally kick my ass. Like, but I could beat you into the ground in real life.
Kid, I'm 14, okay? I could beat you up and take your quarters, and there's nothing you can do about it. You're right, Mr. Asimakis. You're right.
We don't condone violence on this show.
No, we don't. We don't. When it's against each other.
Yes.
Exactly. We'll take it out on the Smash Bowl court, Andy. You and me, bro.
So how did you guys get into game development as a whole? Like, did you think one day you'd both, as a couple, go into making video games together? Or was it something that you both on your own before you met? Had this, how did this whole thing come to be?
So I actually started making games quite a long time ago, mostly work for hire games. So doing stuff for, actually, one of my first clients was like Neopets, if you remember.
Oh my God, Neopets. Oh my God. Did you make the games in the Neopets? Because those games are atrocious.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Andy.
Wait a minute. Well, listen. You got to ask the hard questions on the show.
Yeah, the hard ones. Yep, that's what we strive for.
We had the Flash games for that, and for Disney, and then also for Nickelodeon. And then we do mobile games, and now mobile and PC games. And then Mary was an accountant, and it's sort of the family business, so she started to help out. And she has a knack for project management and making sure that we don't spend all our money and live on the streets. So we went with that, and yeah, that's sort of, now we're working on original IP, which is sort of new for us, because we've worked for work for hire for quite a long time.
Well, it's funny because I feel like we've come full circle. Mike started working out of a bedroom
now we're
many years ago. And I remember I bought him his first desk when he started doing this. And here we are, back in a bedroom. So
We're all in a bedroom. It's all right.
Here we are.
it's a bedroom converted to an office.
Yes.
I'm in my living room. I have this giant, stupid looking backdrop in the middle of my living room while my couch is right there. And sometimes my wife is behind the curtain over there sitting down on her phone just looking at stuff.
Behind every great man, there, as the saying goes.
Yes, there's the other half. So how large is your team right now, like, working on this game?
Well, on this game specifically, our team is about 20 in total. On this game, I don't even know where we are right now. With the testers and stuff, I think there's a significant amount of the team working primarily on this game at this point. But it's kind of ebbed and flowed over the course of production from when it started as a simple game.
So with your experience working for others, essentially doing contract work and now doing this yourself, what was that adjustment like going from that to, you know, having your own staff and like managing that whole aspect of it, not just from a financial standpoint, but also from a management standpoint, from a team leader standpoint?
I think it's much more stressful for sure. There's a lot more that you need to learn and do, like, you know, Twitch and marketing and things like that you don't necessarily need to know if you're just working on a game for someone else and delivering. Also, there's scope, right? So, you know, adding parts and things like that, the decision comes down to us and it's our own money. So it's a little more difficult to do. So every decision definitely matters and there's a lot more weight to it. But
it's also much more rewarding.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we've always been very humbled and privileged to work with such iconic brands. And when you're entrusted to work with those types of properties, there's no deviation from that, right? You're given a specific design task, a very specific objective, and a very specific timeline. So some of that creativity is not in your hands. So I think we learned a lot working on those projects. But on this type of project, we have the freedom to go from a really simple game design to something that's morphed into something so much larger, which is great because we've gotten something that we feel we can be extremely proud of. But at the same time, it's completely our decision. So you don't have someone that you're saying, no, here's, you know, this budget or here's this timeline. We were originally to release this in 2019, and we've essentially expanded our launch date by almost a year. And the only people we really at this point need to explain that to is ourselves and the people that are following us on Steam and on social media that are looking forward to playing the game.
And also, like, I can't, like, if I'm dealing with Iron Man or SpongeBob, you can't make SpongeBob fly. Like, there's certain things you can't do, right? But working with the big iconic IPs is great, but yes, it is limiting, and you're basically working with someone else's baby, whereas here we're creating our own characters, our own parts, our own robots. So I think it's sort of a dream to do, because it's like, it's all that we like as a team. You know, there's a little bit of Transformers in there. There's a little bit of, you know, a little bit of the sports games that we grew up with, like the early NBA Jam and things like that. And then there's a little bit of the combat games or the fighting games that we like early Street Fighter. So, you know, if a client's never going to let you create anything quite like this. So it's sort of freeing and to be able to do it. It's kind of psychotic because we're working on things that it's different for sure.
It's an interesting
But we think that some of the choices that we're making are things that people will like, right? It's, you know, I think that there's an audience out there that likes games that are sports games, but maybe like the idea that you could destroy your opponent, which you can't do in a football game or, you know, a basketball game or any real game, like tennis or anything like that. So So we think that there's some features in there that people will gravitate to. And so far, people have liked it, which is good.
I think there's a market for this when you look at games like Mutant League Football of the past, Mutant League Football, Mutant League Hockey, like those arcadey kind of grungy games where you can destroy your opponents. But, you know, this is much more simple. I mean, you're looking at three buttons to pretty much do everything that you need to do, which makes it very easy to pick up and play. You don't really even have to look at the mapping of your controller. You just go, oh, okay, that one does that, that one does that, okay, and that one jumps. Okay, good, I'm good to go. Like, that's really all you need to know, and there's something to be said for that, and I think that's a very important niche, a very important market to kind of hit, is the get in, get out, pick up and play. You understand the concept from the second you pick up the controller, shoot the thing that way, score a goal. Like, it's not big brain stuff. So I think there's definitely something to be said for that kind of those decisions being made.
Yeah, that's what we wanted. We wanted, you know, my 8-year-old can play the game, which is cool. Like, I kick her ass, but you know,
as you should.
Takes a little skill to become a skillful player, but we wanted it to be easy to pick up and play. And our goal is for people to check in. You know, you could do a tournament. Each match lasts about 2 minutes, and you could do a tournament in 30 minutes. So the idea is you could pick up and play in 30 minutes and do a full tournament every day if you wanted to, which, you know, most games, you can't do that. It takes a lot longer. It's more of a time sink. Mm-hmm. We wanted to allow for a game that you can just get in and get out if you wanted to, or if you wanted to play consecutive matches. You could do a longer tournament, but yeah, we're trying to strike the balance between something that's casual but also skillful.
Mm. Look, go ahead, Andy.
I was gonna say, and you guys also, you couldn't ask for a better place to be in Canada, which is just a budding indie game dev scene over the last couple of years. We've seen now more and more some of our favorite indie games are coming out of Canada, and you guys are part of that ever-growing community of just amazing game developers, which is astounding.
Yeah, I think being Canadian is definitely helpful. And then also all the studios are very, you know, everyone's sort of nice to each other and not overly.
That helps.
And then also we have a lot of talent that comes from the big studios, you know, where they're either, I don't know, they want to work on an indie game because they've worked on, you know, a AAA and maybe painted rocks for the last 5 years of their life or something.
Right.
Try something a little different or take a break. So it's also good in the sense of finding talent and people who sort of understand how to make a game, which, you know, that's,
yeah, I think
it's important.
Canada's has a great indie scene and a great ecosystem. We're in Ontario specifically, and we're probably at a different level of maturity relative to maybe other parts of Canada, but we really have a lot of amazing indie studios coming up and growing, and we're happy to see that globally we're starting to be recognized.
Yeah, and Montreal has a lot of good developers as well.
Yeah. So I want to shift gears a little bit, because, you know, the world is very different than it was 6 months ago. Obviously, you know, you already spoke about how you pushed this game basically a year. Obviously, you know, there has been a lot of change since you've made that decision to do that. What has this been like for you guys? You already mentioned the whole working out of a spare bedroom and that whole thing, but I can't imagine being where you are as, you know, a relatively small team, kind of ramping up. Now you have PAX, which is different than it's ever been before. And you're like, okay, I guess we have to do things this way now. Like, what has this transition been like for you?
For me personally, if I'm being honest, it's been very stressful.
Sure.
Because we don't know what to expect, right? So we've been part of a lot of online events, talking to platforms and publishers. Because we're, you know, while we're very far along in the game, we're still relatively early in some ways. So we're talking to publishers, we're still talking to platforms. You know, we'd like to bring the game to, let's say, PlayStation or Xbox. We got a Switch dev kit, which is great. So it's been good in a way because we have a lot of good access to have meetings with people. But in terms of PAX, we don't know what's the turnout going to be, mm-hmm. how many people are going to download the demo and try it, what sort of feedback are we going to get. When you're in a booth, you could just ask the guy, hey, what do you think? But in this case, we have a digital booth. We're not sure how many people will filter into the demo and will filter into signing up for the closed beta. So it's nerve-wracking, to be honest, but the whole team has been working hard to get the demo in a good place so that people can play it and we can be proud of it. We've been working to reach out to streamers and publications just to get some exposure for the game so people know that it exists. But it's very different than being at an event and having people come in and being able to talk to them. So I think it's going to be, we don't know. We don't know what kind of feedback we'll get, but we're hoping that we're going to get a good amount of people into the game. We just hope that we're able to capture some feedback as well.
It's something that I can't really wrap my head around, like how somebody in your position, I know how we do it. We do what the platform with the conference holder tells us we have to do. And you're like, okay, but I feel like there's a lot more creativity to how you're going to approach the situation. Like you were saying with contacting streamers, like that's a huge thing. You know, Andy and I were talking about that recently. Like that's kind of what E3 should really be doing. Going forward, like anything they're showing on the show floor that they have a demo for, they should be putting up online so that they can get as many people who can't afford to fly to, you know, Los Angeles or Vegas or wherever the hell it is these days. I think it's Los Angeles, but people can't afford to fly and do that. This is a very unique opportunity to kind of reinvent the wheel, as it were. So in some sense, is it exciting to you too, or is it just fear at this point?
I think no, it's totally exciting. It's sort of I guess you create something and then it's your baby, but you know, we're putting it out there a little bit, a little bit early, but like we hope that people will understand that it's not quite ready and that we still want some feedback and we still want to polish it and make it better. So we don't see the game as one and done. We see it as sort of an iterative thing. I think even the big games, you know, from AAA studios, they keep iterating.
Yeah.
You could look at Amazon Studios. You could look at Ubi. Like a lot of the games now, like they're live service and they're constantly changing. We need the same thing, but we're just not as good as getting that data from people. And in a booth, you know, you have people coming in. You could ask them and talk to them, sort of side by side. We can't do that this time. But you know, 10 million people—that's amazing. And I know, you know. For me, when I go to an event, I go straight to the indie section because I like to see the indie stuff. I hope the same thing happens with PAX online and that people come and check out these games. And, you know, I guess we're just digitizing the entire thing. Instead of going to a booth and trying a demo, you're going to a digital booth and then you're downloading a demo and you're trying it. It's just you don't get that. I don't know how we're going to do that conversation yet. Other than the Discord and things like that, I don't know if people will stick around and say, you know, hey, I like this and I don't like that. That's the part that we still need to figure out.
I think you'll be surprised. You know, I feel like PAX especially, even though it's the most accessible convention open to the public, but I think still not everyone can attend for, you know, location reasons aside. But with a more digital format, I think you'll see folks more eager. And, you know, folks are home now more than ever. So having a free demo of the game available, eager to give feedback, you might see more than you would see at a conventional PAX East or PAX West, for example.
You know, they have the ability to capture a global audience as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're 24 hours a day for 9 consecutive days.
Right.
Shift from a typical convention. And the fact that someone can just log in and, you know, look at whatever it is that they want, gives them more time to explore things than they would at a traditional convention. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for indie studios like ourselves than would traditionally exist in a typical conference setting.
Plus, you're showing off a 1v1 or 2v2 game, which as soon as one person plays it, they tell their friend, let's get a 2v2 thing going on with our rival, so to speak. And then the word will spread fairly quickly.
Yeah, that's our hope. And it's exciting, I think. It's exciting for everyone. But it's just figuring out how to navigate. And so far, everyone's been amazing. Yourselves included, right? They're offering to stream the game. They're checking out the game. We even had someone today because we're horrible at Twitch. I just started our Twitch channel, a week ago, and I have viewers explaining to me how to set up my channel, and they're streaming the game at certain slots during packs. So the community is really come to help us quite a lot, and we're appreciative of that. And we sort of see ourselves as the underdogs, and a lot of the streamers, they're sort of underdogs as well, right? They don't have millions of followers or fans, but maybe they have 1,000 or 100. So we hope that we can grow with them and sort of grow together, and we hope the game does well for them, and that they're there early, and we could make a go of it as sort of a new competitive game that they sort of discovered or were one of the first to discover. So, hopefully once we make a lot of money, we could also start giving them prizes or cash pools to give to their viewers as well.
You're saying all the right things, Michael.
Mm-hmm. Checking all the right boxes.
So we have big ideas. It's just, again, we're going against some of the behemoths out there. So we hope that we could stand out in some way.
What kind of tools is PAX providing you for getting the game some billboard space, as it were, some digital billboard space? Like, how are they helping you show the game off, aside from just giving you a place to have people come in and download it?
So what I've been told is that they're going to be putting some ads on some of their publications. So they're doing that. I believe there's going to be some sort of Steam presence, which I think would be interesting. So when people are on Steam, they sort of see who the PAX participants are. I'm not sure on that, but I've heard something rumors about that. They've given us space, which is great, in the indie section. So we hope that the indie section will be something that people gravitate to. Because I do know that some of the big publishers, the AAAs are going to be there as well, right? So that's been most of it so far.
Some social media support as well.
Yeah, and I think, like doing some tweets and things like that, I think they're going to be doing in the days to come. But I think they're also trying to figure some of it out as well. Like, it's a lot of people, there's a lot of streamers, and there's a lot of booths as well.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I mean, that's the reason why I was asking, is because I feel like we're all learning this on the fly, so I don't know how much they can actually do aside from just putting you on the site and just getting you out on their channels as best they can. Do you know how, I don't know, maybe even Andy, maybe you even know, but do you know what the interface is going to be for a consumer, for an attendee? What is this going to look like? Is it just going to be a list of names and we're just going to click it and see what happens? Like, how does this work?
That's what I'm worried about as well. I think we're going to get a sneak peek tomorrow at what it looks like, over and over again, sort of what does our booth look like? Like, where are we? Right. In a digital thing, it all depends on what's on the first page usually, right? Because most people won't scroll around too much. We have yet to see. Hopefully we're not buried in like five links or something like that. But I think it remains to be seen. So we don't know yet. That's the short answer.
This whole thing is just so fascinating to me, Andy.
Yeah, I feel like it... You got to give a go of it, to see what works, what doesn't work. And it can't really fail because there's no precedent for this in the industry. I've been seeing a lot of Discord, like interview scheduling and I was playing a game earlier today, Night Squad 2, that you had to go through Discord to access the PAX demo. to play it.
Yeah, and I don't think a lot of people, I think that's too big of a barrier to entry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For us, like, my hope is that it's going to link to our Steam page. People are going to click on the demo and download it and try it, right? Or at the least, I don't know, look at the trailer and, you know, either wish list it or try to join, you know, the closed alpha and beta, because there's no real risk to it. So that's our hope. But who the heck knows, right? Like, when people go to the site, a lot of people are going to gravitate straight to the AAAs, I think, and getting those sorts of demos. But I do think there's a lot of people who just follow indies and like to see indies. So our hope is people are going to wander over to the indie section and find us. But yeah, it's totally exciting. And yeah, there's no barrier to entry. Anyone can join in. Like, you don't even have to pay, I think, to get in. So can you imagine? Like, that's crazy. I hope the site stays up, because I can see there being a lot of people, right? It's like the first week back at school, and people are hanging out at home.
Listen, if you want to see some real numbers, some real eyes on your game, here's what you do. Oh. It's going to be me and Steven.
That's right.
Versus both of you. 2v2 deathmatch.
Yeah.
It's happening.
That's how
it's going to happen.
That's how it's done.
All right.
when Andy and I go to PAX, like, what we cover indie games. That's what we love to do. But we also obviously play AAA games. But when we go, they usually, when it's the floor, they give you 1 hour as press or as media to go the floor with nobody else there, just media. And that's typically when Andy and I are like, okay, let's go see the big AAA things, get them out of the way, because we're not waiting online, because we book appointments like crazy people.
It's back to back.
We have rarely do we have a 15-minute break, and we're usually
eat while you walk.
Eat while you're walking to the next thing.
Yeah,
and we play the game. We interview the dev. We get it on camera. It's 6 to 10 minutes of, you know, whatever we're going to talk about. Maybe 3 minutes, whatever the hell, whatever we have time for. Do it, and boom, we move on to the next thing. And that's sort of what we're doing here. We're booking appointments where we could speak to somebody, play their demo ahead of time, speak to them about the game or after, depending on when they give it to us. But the exciting thing for us is that we can literally see everything if we want to now. Whereas when we're walking PAX, we're like, shit, I didn't know that game was going to be here because we didn't get an email from their PR team. We didn't know this game was going to be here. That looks really cool. Let's get their business card. And then when we get home, we're like, oh, let's call them and see if we could get them on the show. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just really intriguing to me. I feel like you guys have such a unique opportunity to be seen, to be heard, but also this terrifying opportunity to just, for nothing to work, for them to just be like, sorry,
or to fly just under the radar completely.
Just, but not just you guys, just like, we booked, I think we had 47 appointments last year. I think we saw 47 and interviewed 47 different devs.
The beauty now, Steven, is that it's across so many more days.
Right.
And now it's other developers' time zones now. So we can book stuff at 10 o'clock at night for us here.
Yeah.
When it's like noon for some other developer.
Right. Right.
So it's like the world's our oyster now when it comes to developers at PAX. And it's, I'm not going to lie, I like this format, and I wish that this was, like, if I couldn't attend PAX in person, this should be always part of the convention mentality, this digital version of it, always.
And I think now with the change in gamer consumption, the fact that you have a captive audience at home, I think this will set the stage for consumer gaming conferences or an aspect of them going forward.
Yeah, it'll probably be a hybrid or something like that.
Yeah, sure.
Because then you get, like, it would be nice to have, like, I don't know, 5 days of online and then 3 days of in-person or something like that. So, like, you can actually circle back with things that you really, really liked during the online portion or something like that. So, but it is definitely interesting times. Like, last I heard, I think, like, gaming is up 30% or something like that, which
it's way higher. I was speaking to one of our friends who works at Square Enix now. It's just the numbers they're seeing on the digital front alone of game sales. They're astronomical. Now, the issue there is it's the hardware. They're not certain how that's going to land with the next generation launching in a few months. Yeah. But software is just they cannot believe how high numbers have been lately.
Yeah, that's good, and it's a good value, right? Games are always going to be a good mm-hmm. value for your entertainment dollar. So you know, I could see why. Even myself, I've been buying more games. So it's even though I don't have time to play them all, it's still a good entertainment value, and it's what like I can't go see a movie anymore.
Right.
And can't do anymore.
And also, look at games like Fall Guys. That game deserves to be a hit, but I think given what's happening now in the world, it made it an even bigger hit than it should have been. I mean, it's a fun game. I'm not going to knock it, but it came at the perfect time. And I think your guys' game, once you find that magic moment, that perfect streamer, it's that next big thing you have to play.
Yeah. I think, too, because it's a little bit zany, a little bit quirky, mm-hmm. gives you sort of a break from reality. It's entertaining. It's something that people are really gravitating towards right now. So I think that as well makes it that much more special.
Yeah, when I first saw it, I thought it was fun, but I'm like, well, where's the metagame? Right? Like, there's certain things that I looked at it and I'm like, okay, it's cool, but you know, will it captivate people's attention for long periods of time? But you're right. I think people are looking for that sort of you know, playing together, the franticness, the fun, the candy looking art and like that. it's cool. I'm very happy that happened. I think it's good for us because we're a smaller indie than those guys, but it's good news for us when things like that and Rocket League and some of these other games do well. It gives us a little bit more confidence. Obviously, like that's like getting hit. That's like winning the lottery or getting hit by lightning. But,
right.
It's even a small factor of that success for us would be amazing.
Yeah, just to go back to the whole video game being consumed at just ridiculous rates, video games didn't have to change. That's the other crazy thing is like when this whole thing happened, like movies still have no idea what the hell they're doing. None. They don't know how to make them anymore. They don't know. They don't. They started Batman again, and 2 days later, they got COVID. Batman has COVID. They have no idea how to keep people safe. They have no idea what to charge people. The whole Mulan thing, $30 for a 48-hour rental. Like, they don't know how to communicate that to their people. You're getting...
Or look at restaurants retrofitting all their equipment, building these outdoor sections, and these are just... You're just putting a bandage over something without a broader solution. And then game devs who come on their show say, how's it affected you? It's like, well, our team is all over the world, so we still do our Skype calls. We still do our weekly meetings. And nothing has really changed for us in that realm.
Right.
Yeah, we have an office, so we miss, you know, seeing people and being over there, that sort of stuff. But, yeah, generally it hasn't affected us at all. And yeah, like I don't watch TV, and I used to watch TV once in a while. I don't watch TV anymore because it kind of the quality is horrible. I don't watch sports anymore because again, I don't like it without the crowd.
Not many sports to watch.
But yeah, games is sort of like business is as usual as much as anything can be right now. So I do think it's a great time as well for gaming. I think gaming already is a growing industry, but I think we're going to gather more fans. Mm-hmm. People playing games in general because of this, just because it's approachable and people like to play together. And it's just the quality is still there. Whereas if you watch like a talk show, what was it, Jimmy Fallon? I was watching Jimmy Fallon. I'm like, this is horrible.
It's a Skype call. You're watching a Zoom
meeting. It's like I do my Zoom meetings every week for work. I need to watch Stephen Colbert do one at night.
I'm paying for cable to watch this right now.
There's no production value. And I feel it's also like you people have like these multi-million dollar shows with so much budgets, and this is all you can muster. You can't get a real microphone.
Yeah, what the hell? I'll tell you what we are going to get. We're going to get a real video game, and it's going to happen sometime next year. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. But I think that's the thing, right? All these TV shows that you were tuning into because of their high quality production value, they're a podcast, right? And, so now competing with.
Well, now they're competing against you, right?
Yeah.
And you have
right. more. And we know what we're doing for the last 3 or 4 years. And this is all very new to them. Like, oh, YouTubers, like, how hard could it be? It's not easy. Yeah. It is not easy.
Well, Jimmy, let's say, okay, Jimmy Fallon, if he was doing this, right? It's like he has all these, he has the band and he has the guests and he has all this other stuff. Whereas you two need to be on all the time and you get that. And that, because of that, you're entertaining. But these guys, they don't know what to do with that silence.
Well, the thing is, too, that's not their format.
No.
They have an introduction, they have a band, they have whatever their format is.
Right.
And now they've had to look at that and say, wait a minute, I'm no longer, you know, TV show ABC. Without this format, who's going to recognize my brand if I'm at home in my bathrobe or whatever at my kitchen table? Like, I'm not recognizable the same way I was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just funny how much they can be propped up by all the bells and whistles and not having, like, the audience laughter
in the
background. It's like, it just feels sad to me.
Yes. If you ever listen to certain artists on YouTube, they have the artist singing without the music in the background, right?
Mm-hmm. They very suck. Different.
Like a lot of some of them are good.
Tell us how you really feel.
Some of them are good, but most of them are not good at all. So that's what I sort of compare it to. It's like, if you can't, if I don't want to hear, if you can't, like, entertain with nothing, you're kind of in trouble now because all that fluff is gone. And now I think real talent is shining through. I think it's T-Pain, or I forget his name. Some guy, some streamer, right?
Yeah.
He's a rapper.
Yeah.
And I was watching a little bit of it, and I'm like, this guy is, like, you know, legit. Like, I want to watch this. He's funny, and it was entertaining, right? And I kind of, we're trying to get a little of this in our game as well. But it reminds me of, like, when you used to watch WWF for WWE now, like wrestling, and it's like they're doing just an interview and they're just winging it, but they're used to it, they're just good at it, and it's entertaining, and they don't need all the other stuff. That you could do an interview like this and they could just entertain you the whole time. So they have the I guess comedy or entertainment muscle developed, so I think a lot of these stars are gonna have to watch out for streamers and podcasters like you.
I think too,
damn right.
I think this is going to bring an opportunity for new collaboration. So if you look at concerts, they're starting to stream concerts on Twitch and all of these collaborations that months ago, I mean, you would not have, you know, a number one selling artist doing a concert online because it would cannibalize their ticket sales and all their tour dates. And now that is the only way that they can, you know, see their audience.
Well, I think it was Post Malone did something like he did a cover for, I forget what band. Oh, it was Nirvana. So we watched that and it was good. They did a good job. Right. So I think that's happening more and more. Mm-hmm. And, for the right artists, who it works, but for the ones that are propped up, it doesn't work.
Well, can we just get Post Malone a shower at some point? The man looks filthy. I mean, I know he's worth so much. Please bathe.
you just want to pinch cheeks when you see
him. We met him actually once in person, and he's actually really nice. So.
I'm sure he's a fine man.
Very sweet man. Just yes, salty.
I'm sure he's very charming. Sure he's
very salty to the
taste. Just a little funky.
All right, let's switch gears here. It is time to get into rapid fire questions. This is where we get to know you a little bit better. Okay, we're going to ask you some silly stuff, and we want some off the top of your head type answers. First up, would you rather have the power of flight or invisibility?
Flight.
Wow, you guys are married.
You're not a moose.
Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Yes.
No.
Oh, splitskies.
Half and half.
Indeed. Is cereal a soup?
No.
But you had to think about it, which is nice. You gave it thought.
I'm confused by the question.
Is a bowl of breakfast cereal with milk soup?
It's soup like, no. But no, it's not. It's okay. Not hot.
It's fair enough.
Treat. Okay.
Now, since you're both parents, this could be a tough question. Would you rather have 3 kids and no money, or no kids and $3 million? You could buy some new kids.
Well, for 2 kids and $1 million.
Kids are a lot of money, Andy.
Have you spent $3 million on your 2 kids, Stephen?
No, I just mean actually adopting and buying children is a lot of money. It's going to chip into a lot of that funds. Did we get an answer? Did they choose?
I created my own answer.
We want to be in the middle. We want 2 kids and $1 million.
Fair enough. Well, I think that's a fair answer.
Oh, okay. Well, all right.
We're fine. She's the accountant, so.
Fair. Fair.
Canadian or U.S.?
If you got Canadian, it would, you know, Canadian. We'll give you, we'll give you the extra couple bucks.
Yeah.
If you're eating ramen noodle soup, are you using a fork or a spoon?
Fork.
Mm. Mm. Would you rather have free Wi-Fi, and it's good free Wi-Fi,
the good stuff,
wherever you go, or have free coffee wherever you went?
Wi-Fi.
Mm.
I don't drink coffee.
So I can drink the coffee and use his Wi-Fi.
That's fair. It's fair. You guys are getting around all the hard ones.
Yeah, I think you're doing some like chicanery with these questions. Like,
what is the dumbest way you've hurt yourself?
I broke my thumb teaching my kid how to skate and fell in the same spot 3 times because clearly I didn't learn. Bye.
Boardwalk, and I looked at a lady, and I was walking forward, and I hit a parking meter.
Oh, I ran. How long ago was this? Please say a long time.
Just last week.
Before we met.
Well, just to build on dumb accidents. Would you rather know how you will die or when you will die?
Oh fuck. When?
Man, if you knew how, and you're like, well, it's gonna be a plane, like going
shark attack.
Like you're like, what? What do you mean a plane? I can never fly again. You just live in your
bad life. Tofu.
Oh,
no.
But then you just got hit by a plane, so you weren't even on it. So you've been avoiding the plane for nothing.
Exactly. You see, it could have been a toy plane falling from out of a building. A kid was playing with it, chucked it out of his window, and it comes splitting your skullsies right in half. Oh my word!
That's what Alanis calls irony.
Indeed. Murphy bed or futon?
Futon.
Fair.
Neither.
I was gonna say.
When you pour milk over cereal, what does that milk become? Is it still milk? Is it a sauce? Is it a broth?
You really like cereal, don't you?
We really do. We really do. It's a sickness.
It's still milk.
Yeah, it's like tainted milk.
Tainted milk.
Yeah.
Listen, I almost have this anti-cereal propaganda on my podcast, sir. Cereal elevates milk, okay?
Brings it to that next level.
There's another option.
What's the last meal you made for yourself that sucked?
Today.
We're getting ready for Pat.
Yes, so we just had some new, like we just threw stuff.
Our fridge
together.
Is starting to run low, and we haven't had time for pasta.
And then we got bacon. Mm.
Then mixed in some tomatoes.
It still tasted okay, though.
What excites you more, the PlayStation 5 or the Xbox Series X?
Oh, that's a hard question. Geez. That depends on which platform comes on board for Smash first.
First.
Yeah. Oh, you hear that, Sony and Microsoft?
Yeah.
So the Switch Pro then.
Switch Pro.
I like that Xbox going with like a Netflix model, and then PlayStation is just going, it seems more traditional, but their lineup's cool. So I don't know. It's sort of like two different gaming theories against each other. So we'll see what wins.
What famous robot do you want as a cameo?
Oh my God. That is a great question.
What'd you say?
Optimus Prime.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I would get Johnny Five in there because he needs some love.
Yeah.
Johnny Five, man. Johnny Five was dope.
Oh, and then Metroid, Samus.
Oh, wow.
There's a lot.
You can get Samus in there. Yeah. Why not?
That's actually a good point. Have you guys thought of doing like fun, like cameo skins for the mechs at some point? A collaboration.
We have a few that are branded right now that we that are pretty cool. And then we experimented with some things that look like, without actually being Optimus Prime, but kind of looks like Optimus Prime.
Sure.
Just red and blue. Yes.
You
want to avoid that.
Oh yeah, we've had a developer that was sued by Hasbro on this podcast before.
Indeed.
So if ever you do that, we'll help you navigate that to victory. Okay, so I'm saying you get the green light from us to put Optimus Prime in your game without fear of legal retribution from Hasbro.
Or are you going to represent us? And we're like,
no, we'll just give you advice from our from email.
From the comfort, from the bedroom. Comfort of our homes.
Would you rather have a dog with a cat's personality or a cat with a dog's personality?
That's a weird one.
I know. Just thinking about it makes me all lose.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like cats. We have a dog.
Can I get a dog?
I don't like the dog that much either, so I don't know.
I've had nothing but friendly cats in my life. I've had nothing but good cats in my life. So
who will eat you the second they are able to?
He went to go get a cat and it bit me.
Somehow I think you deserved it.
I agree.
I think so too.
What's your beer of choice?
Heineken. Well, right now I'm drinking a lot of Heineken.
You know what? I'm going to amend that question. Because I want to make this Canadian. Molson or Labatt?
Neither.
You got to choose one. It's like choosing Coors or Bud for us here in the States. If we have to choose gun to our head,
Molson.
Probably. Okay. Yeah.
Another one called Sleeman, which I think is Canadian. I like that one.
I think so too. Yeah, I think they sell that at the Garden for hockey. They always have like one Canadian beer and you're like, oh, okay. All right, cool. All right, Andy, hit us up with our final question. I'm going to let you do the honors this week.
All right. This is
super important.
It's by far the hardest question you'll be asked in your entire career, both past, present, and future. No question will surpass this one. It is the be-all, end-all. Andy or Steven?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Notice you said Andy twice.
I'll take it, Andy twice. Great. Moving on.
You're gonna take that. You're gonna put that in your pocket as a victory. You're not even giving them a chance to feel awkward about this. You're just gonna take that and you're gonna run.
I don't like my guests to feel awkward, Steven. So if you're trying to make them feel awkward, that's poo on you.
No, it's just a nice happy accident that happens every single week.
Voice.
Hold on a second. You just cut off for a second. Go ahead.
Okay. I was gonna say Steven has a smooth voice, so you win in the voice department, and then Andy's a little bit on the funny side, so you win in that.
I will take that. So we'll go to the bank and cash it.
Listen, you take whatever victories you can get, Andy. They're not coming very often.
I'd rather be the funny one, to be honest.
That's
I don't
fair.
Care.
That's fair. Funny looking is what you are. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to bring us to the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to support us on Patreon, you could do so by going to patreon.com/NDS podcast. Just like our Patreon producers, FNH Paul and Colton the Apprentice Nestler, we cannot continue to grow without your support. So please head over there to patreon.com/NDS podcast. As little as $1 gets you into our VIP Discord, a bonus episode each and every month, and you get to vote on that bonus episode. There are also other tiers, $3, $5, $10, etc., etc. If you want to follow us on social media, we are at NDS podcast. Andy is at Pants Guy, and I am at Batchild27. Michael, Mary, where can everybody find you guys?
Well, you can find the game at smashballgame.com. I guess.
And you can find us on Instagram at SmashBallGame, on Twitter at SmashBallGame, and our Discord, which I don't have handy.
We'll throw a link in our description to the Discord so you guys can can click on that and you know, head right over there.
To your Patreon.
What's that?
We're going to join the Patreon. Woo-hoo! I didn't even.
Oh my God! Look at you that. Guys!
Look, we did it, folks!
Oh my God!
Right here, right now, you're live. Right here.
I love it.
That's how we do it? Do we have to do an hour show with everyone to get people?
I sure, yeah.
Just random people in the street. Hey, well,
now we can say, hey, you know, most of our guests give us money. It's customary.
You know, last
week. You know, just saying, last time they gave. Open their wallet, the deep pockets for us.
If you want to follow us on Twitch, we are at twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams. And I also stream on Twitch at twitch.tv/batchild. Our theme song, Retro Chatter, was by Bradley Parsons at Train Sound Studio. And Andrew Douglas does all of our cartoon art. And Matt Murray has done all of our overlays and logos. And we cannot be more thankful for all of that. And with that, that brings us to the very, very end of the show. Andy, is there anything you want to tell the kids before we go?
Yes, people, these guests today are great. And just so you know how I know this, it is their anniversary today.
That is true.
And they came on this show anyway.
Round of applause for the anniversary.
This is just the devotion to their game is more than their relationship.
So you can imagine what shitstorm they're going through that they are having their anniversary doing this podcast.
So I should say you're welcome for the greatest gift you'll ever get on
this
your anniversary.
It's
talking to
you.
Us two bozos.
Huge honor for you.
So you're welcome.
I hope you
for
know that.
That.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Michael. It was an absolute pleasure hanging out with you. Good luck with everything, and please reach out to us in the future with anything you need. If you want some streamer stuff, if you want to fight each other in the game, if you whatever you need, don't be a stranger. We'll be here. Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, listeners. And as always, please be excellent to each other.